Each time you settle in to meditate, you've got to take stock of your mind to see what shape it's in, to see what it needs right now. Sometimes it's really tired, it's been thinking a lot, and it needs to rest. At other times it's sluggish, and it needs to be activated. So an important part of the meditation is learning how to read these symptoms and then prescribe the right medicine. The medicine is laid out in those seven steps in Method 2. If the mind's been thinking too much, all you have to need to do is just focus on one thing, the breath, the sensation of the breath coming in, the sensation of the breath going out, and make it comfortable. And if the mind's really been tired, that's all you have to do for the hour. Just try to stay with as much comfortable breathing as possible. Give the mind a chance to rest. Give it a chance to gain some nourishment. Give it some balance. At other times, once the breath gets comfortable enough, then you want to go right into surveying the body. See how the breathing feels in different parts. And doing what you can to deal with any sense of tightness or tension or pain in the body. Working your way up to being aware of the whole body coming as your breath comes in, the whole body as the breath goes out. Or choosing a particular point of focus. You may find that focusing on the nose is not comfortable, so move around until you find a place that feels right for you. Because you find that the meditation tends to swing back and forth between these two poles. On the one hand, giving the mind a chance to rest, and on the other hand, giving it work to do. And you've got to learn how to read the symptoms of the mind that needs to do work or that needs to do rest. Otherwise, if you give it work to do when it's already exhausted, it's going to rebel. Or if you just let it rest when it's already well rested, then nothing happens. The meditation doesn't move anywhere. It doesn't develop any direction. So a large part of the skill of the meditation is learning how to read your mind, because after all, that's what the meditation is all about. Learning how to read the mind, how to notice when there's greed, when there's anger, when there's delusion, when there's too much desire, when there's too little desire in the practice. Because the whole purpose of the meditating, giving the mind a topic to focus on, is not that you study just that topic, but you learn how to read the mind in all its different manifestations. And that's not something that can be dictated from the outside. Sometimes we like to have the idea that there's one technique you can use in all circumstances, and you don't have to think too much about it. Just fit the mind into the mold no matter what. But that tends to dull your sensitivities rather than heightening them. And it doesn't teach you how to read the mind at all. Many times you notice in a technique where they have the steps all laid out very carefully, you have to go running to the teacher to have the teacher explain what's happened, place a label on what you've experienced. In other words, you turn all of your powers of evaluation over to the method, over to somebody else. That's not the way the Buddha did things at all. He learned to turn around, look at his own mind, read the symptoms of his mind, as if he were a doctor. Then seeing what medicines there are that can compensate for any imbalance in the mind. So your mind is in the position of being both the doctor and the patient. And the meditation is a way of training the doctor. The doctor learns how to diagnose the disease, how to apply the right remedy. And in the course of doing that, gains a lot of discernment. And this is the discernment that ultimately leads to release. The passages where the Buddha talks about getting the mind into strong states of concentration, and then staying there long enough, not being in a hurry to jump on to the next stage. Otherwise, you get lost in between, and then can't get back to where you started out from. But there are also passages where he talks about an ability to step back a little bit, to observe what's going on. The analogy he gives is of a person sitting down, looking at a person lying down, or a person standing, looking at a person sitting. In other words, you pull back slightly so you can observe the mind. You don't totally leave concentration, but you're not fully absorbed either. It's what John Fuen called just lifting the mind a bit above its object. And the purpose of that is to see what the mind is doing. So you get a perspective not only on the object, but also on the mind in relation to the object. And it's from that position that discernment develops. But these two stages of being fully absorbed in your object and pulling back slightly, they go back and forth. It's not the case that one is better than the other, or that one can do without the other. They can't do without each other. They help each other along. And your only duty is to notice which side you need to emphasize, the side of the stillness or the side of the directed thought and evaluation. Because you're not only treating your illness, you're also training your doctor. Unfortunately, as a meditator, no matter what you do to the illness, the patient doesn't die, keeps coming back. Death here would be that you totally abandon meditation. As long as you stick with the meditation, the patient doesn't die. You get another chance to treat the illnesses, another chance to try new approaches. The important thing in the meditation is you always stand by your willingness to learn. That's what will see you through everything.